Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Los Angeles, the big LA. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Network. I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout, that nasty little term that hurts so many people. Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today with, but unfortunately, my lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg, cannot make it. She has an appointment with a writing group that she's trying to write her memoirs. And so that ran a little over, so we're going to give her that liberty. It's always so sad when Adrienne can't join us. But our guest today, Cheryl Hensel, author of 15 Essential Things You Should Know About Head Injuries. I'm not sure I know three things about head injuries, so I'm going to stay tuned. Yo, stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every single week, especially since we've gone to video. I'm your host, Dave Nassani. This show is the caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial. And oh, yeah, they're very prone to burnout, because they put everyone else's needs above their own. Sound familiar? You know, like the airlines tell us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines, they know this because, you know, from experience, they've seen guys like you, like, black out because they're trying to help a child with their mask before they helped themselves with their own mask. And I guess caregivers are exactly the same way. So, you know, when that happens, you can't help anybody with anything. So don't do it. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing. It's like we needed another thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. Can't go around it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. Got to go through it. Sorry. But hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. Hey, I want to thank my last week's guest, Richard Berrier, who lost his wife 2 years ago and has since reclaimed his post-caregiver life by dating and doing exciting adventures like climb Kilimanjaro. Gosh, man, talk about an overachiever. But just a reminder, you can hear that show, watch that show on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and any show, including the one we're doing today. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. For doing that, I'm going to, because I'm a nice guy, send you my very first book absolutely free. What a deal. All right, enough of that. Cheryl, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this last-minute interview today. I really appreciate it. So
absolutely.
Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Cheryl Hensel?
Hi, everybody. My name is Cheryl Hensel, and I was a middle school teacher for 13 years, and I had stopped to help a motorist and was involved in an accident, which led to brain injury, and that brain injury put me in cognitive rehab for 9 months, and at the time, they didn't tell me I even had a brain injury. They just told me I had a concussion. So the whole life-changing events around that kind of threw me into the world of brain rehab and how I can help people with understanding brain injuries and what they can do to help their body heal their own shortcomings after a concussion. So that's kind of my focus these days.
What do they say? How do you know an attorney's lying? And the answer is when their lips are moving. But that's not, nice joke if you're a nice attorney. And I think I know a nice attorney, so we shouldn't do
probably
that.
Probably do, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, all you attorneys out there. I was saying, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, about your brain injury. I said, how old were you when you had your brain injury or concussion or whatever you want to call it?
I was 35 when I had it, yeah.
So it was an automobile accident?
Yes, I actually was on the phone with 911 helping a motorist, and it was the olden days when we had the bag plug-in phones, so I had to get out and get my phone out of the trunk and plug it in. And I sat back in the car and the dispatcher asked me where I was located. The driver of another vehicle had a seizure while she was driving and she passed out. Oh, and I saw her fall over and her car kept moving. And, you know, when she finally landed on the sidewalk across traffic, she was having a seizure and I had never seen one before. So I immediately just, you know, got my phone out, being the caregiver that I am, and got on the phone to 911. And so when I was talking with the dispatcher, I was standing outside of my car and looking for the street sign. And that's when another vehicle came and actually hit my car, which sent me flying, and I smacked my head on the cement. So being a caregiver puts us in situations sometimes that we, you know, just really shouldn't be in. I guess I should have stayed in my car. I don't know. I have a belief everything happens for a reason. So it's all good now. But at the time, it was.
I know. We can debate till the cows come home. You know, sure, were you supposed to be there? Were you supposed to be kind-hearted? How ironic that this wonderful person, this Mother Teresa, goes to someone's rescue and then somebody hits her, you know. But I've learned over the years that we just can't question that. You know, one thing leads to another, to another, to another. And that's how you get where you're supposed to go. And much of it is not a pleasant trip. You know, much that's of it right. seems like the worst tragedy that you would never wish on your own worst enemy. But, you know, God's got a bigger picture and he can see the whole thing, the forest before the trees, so to speak. And, you know, when we get to the end of our lives, we're going to look back and say, oh, why did I grieve for 20 years when I saw that it was all going to turn out well anyway?
That is so true. And I think that's a big lesson for everybody, because at the time, no matter what the situation, you're so entrenched in it. But when it didn't take me too long to realize that it happened for good reason. But the day after my accident, a student brought a gun to school and shot himself in the hallway. So it was, I don't know that I made that connection yet. Like, oh, I'm glad this accident happened, but I wasn't in school that morning because of the accident. So I didn't have to witness that whole experience. So that was
life is weird, you know, and you know, I can't answer all the questions about why bad things happen to good people. Yeah. But I do believe in a God. I see his creation all around me. And I just don't understand people who think there isn't one, you know, and
I don't either.
This isn't the scope of our interview today, but I just had to mention something about that. Because a lot of people struggle, especially caregivers, you know. They don't understand why they find themselves in caregiver prison all of a sudden. You know, they've lived a good life. They've never done anybody any harm. And now here I am in prison, you know. And many of them struggle with philosophical questions like that. And I can only offer, you know, the solutions that I've discovered myself, you know, like them or hate them or don't agree with them. You know, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for God. And that's going through the 20 years of being a caregiver myself with my lovely wife, who hasn't spoken a word in a sentence in 20 years and just paralyzed on her right side. Many people, you know, say, oh my gosh, how could you do that? Say, you know, do what? I mean, God kind of gives us special grace. It's a new normal for me, and it's an okay
that's
normal.
Right.
And, you know, we've learned so much through it, and we become better people for it. We become stronger people. We become, you know, stronger in our faith. And I don't know if I would be willing to give all that internal stuff up that you can't see, you know, that just makes you a better person, you know, to do it all over again and not tend to not go through that, just to be going through the motions and being in the status quo, you know. Status quo, I don't like. But let's get back to the interview.
Yeah, it definitely teaches you to not take things as seriously and that we really aren't in as much control as we think we are. And so when we know there's a higher power at work and God is there for us, the rest of it just gets a little easier. At least for me, it does.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, what does it mean when you say, because I've heard you say this, create a circle of care to help you with the new normal, quote unquote?
Yeah. I think that's probably key, that a lot of caregivers take it on themselves when, you know, and this can be for any situation, brain injury or concussion or whatever, but you really need that support group, because a person with a brain injury isn't going to be the same person they used to be. And they're going to need some extra care depending on the severity of it. But the more people you can get around you to help you to understand what's going on in your household, the easier that task is for you to get through your daily activities. Mm. Neighbors, friends, family, you know, I think everybody has to be on the same page with that and understand the language that you're using to help them, and just kind of a little coaching session all together so you can help that person maneuver through their new, as you say, like I like to say, the new normals in their life.
Yeah. And some people, you know, mock that term new normal. I'm in a situation here, I'm paralyzed from the neck down, and you're calling this a new normal, you know, and you know, they're going through a lot of anger, a lot of denial, a lot of depression. What do you say to those people? Because that will eventually become their new normal, and like it or hate it, it's better to just accept it and go along with it and be a happy person. Like my wife is an amazingly happy person. One of her best gifts is encouraging others, because they'll look at her with a smile on her face and hope in her heart. She's, oh my God, you know, what am I complaining about? These piddly little things that I think is the end of the world. Look what this woman has accomplished. And she's got a smile on her face and she hasn't lost her faith, you know?
Yeah. I think the quicker that you can just accept that this is, I mean, I think there's a grieving process that goes through with any accident or tragedy that occurs in your life. And it is a loose term, a new normal. But when you accept that it's not going back to the way it used to be, and you can get through those steps quicker of knowing that this is just our life now. I, like you, have been blessed with learning that lesson from my brother, who's a quadriplegic. So when I had my accident, I said to myself, well, I mean, I can still walk and maneuver and function. This is just something I have to work through and understand what I can do to help myself with my daily tasks that I was having trouble with. But, it, you know, my quality of life didn't change dramatically as his did. And I saw him still living and functioning and, you know, carrying on with life the best he could. So I think those teachers come to us in different ways. And the quicker we accept that new normal, the easier we get.
Yeah, God makes sure that there are comforters in our lives, people who've been a little further down the road and know, you know, that it's going to be okay. And I saw in the Hunger Games the other night where the guy said, hope is stronger than fear, you know, and it doesn't take much hope for a person to make it. To get through this tragedy.
That's right. You know? That's right.
So, and the
if
Bible,
you think about
hope, people perish, you know.
Yeah. If you think about a dark room and the small, tiny amount of light it takes to illuminate that room, it's really pretty minuscule, as opposed to a bright room and you try to make it dark, it takes a little bit more. So I like to use that analogy with people, that it's just a little spark of light that really can change the intensity of a room. Yeah.
That's true. Well, let's talk about when you say seek out friends and neighbors, don't try to go it alone. How important is human support, human touch, you know, hugs?
Yeah, that's key. I think that if you can set up schedules with people so you have breaks in your day and you count on family members and maybe neighbors to just say, hey, can you help out with, I need some groceries if you need that. I mean, it might not even be some people are private and they don't want people to know what's going on and everything in their life. But if there's dry cleaning that can get picked up, I think just asking people, because what I find in most situations, people won't say, what can I do to help you? Or if they do, you just say, oh, nothing, I'm good. So if you can make a list of things that people, you could shift the responsibility to somebody that's not a personal thing in your life that can help out. Yeah. Specific things, like even if it's picking up the kids from school, if you have a friend that can do that for you twice a week, just to give you some extra breathing room and some, take some things off your plate, because people will ask, but they won't push you like, oh, no, what can I do to help you? So if you can, right off the gate, think of things that aren't crucial for you to do, those little menial tasks.
Yeah. And then don't be shy if they say, oh, no, I can't. I have a soccer practice at that time. Don't be shy. Say, well, how about the next day, you know, at 3 o'clock, you know, just
right.
They will eventually, because you need it. You desperately need it. And this is no time to be shy. There's no time to be thin skinned.
And even if you ask one of your friends to handle that for you, like, okay, Susie, these are the things that I need help with. Can you help find these people? Because they're more likely to be honest with someone other than yourself and take on tasks, even if it's making meals at first, you know,
Just find that. Delegate.
Find an advocate for you that can help. Yeah.
I hope you people are taking notes down there. There's great advice we're given here. Let's talk about when you say things like, understand that the person may look the same but not feel the same. What are you talking about?
Well, I think that most people that have had a brain injury or brain trauma, you can't see it. So when you look at the person, they look like they're the same person they used to be. If you had a broken arm, you can see someone in a cast. You know, there's certain things you can't ask them to do because of the cast limiting their abilities. But someone with a brain injury, when you see them and they start to look like, oh, they look like they're rehabilitated and they're normal, but why do they have such strange spending habits? Or why can't they remember what I told them? The frustration sets in fairly quickly because you look at them and they seem to be functioning. They seem like they somewhat have things in order, but yet there's personality traits about them that change that don't really make sense. So depending on what part of the brain you injure, you might have a symptom or a behavior based on that part of the brain that was damaged.
Mm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we're really up on a break, so let's take a break and then we'll go into some other things when we get back. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune into Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, and Cheryl Hensel, author of 12 Things. What's the title of your book?
15 Things You Should Know About Brain Injuries. Yeah.
15 Things. See, I forgot three of them already.
That's okay.
Now, I was asking you before about your internet connection. It's more reliable if somehow we're plugged in with an Ethernet cable as opposed to Wi-Fi. Are you on Wi-Fi?
I am on Wi-Fi, yeah.
All right. Well, next time we'll plug in. We'll have more time to prepare.
Okay, right. So you had asked me about the person looking okay. So I just wanted to give an example of, you know, you're seeing them and it looks like they're still, you know, maintaining life and things are back to normal, but yet they have impulsive buying. So if you were to hit the frontal lobe of your head or your brain were to hit, you know, because the brain's just on a stem and it, you know, I don't know if you saw the movie Concussion, but, you know, here's your brain, here's a stem and then the skull around it. So the brain is flexible. If it gets impacted enough, the front of your brain could hit the skull. Well, any part of your brain could. So if somebody hit the frontal part, which is, you know, this frontal bode here, things involved in that part of the brain would be impulse buying, problem solving. So they used to maybe never buy things. And all of a sudden they're like, what are you doing on, you know, Home Shopping Network? Why are you buying so much lately? That's a sign that, you know, that's just part of their brain trying to, you know, figure things out. And there's trillions of connections in the brain. So one little part could be off that they look normal, but there's processing problems that are going on with them. You're on mute again.
I said, thank you. That explains a lot. Because sometimes my wife likes to shop too much.
Well,
explain the use of supportive communication. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going through, but is there something I can do to help? You know, that kind of thing. This is for the people who know people going through some stuff and don't exactly know how to act, don't know, you know, how to act normal anymore because normal doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, they don't want to be condescending and they don't want to be, you know, the person who keeps reminding the person that they've got some bad stuff happening. So what do you say? What do you not say?
That's a great question. I think that one of the most frustrating things that people can hear is you're just not the same. And why can't you remember things? Or, yeah, well, let's take it to the positive. You know, I think what the person that's going through it would appreciate hearing the most would be, I don't know what you're going through. Because when people would say to me, oh, yeah, I forget things all the time, too. And they would kind of belittle what you're going through. Like, oh, I know what you're going through. And I thought, you have no idea what I'm going through. So I think that just being cognizant of the wording that you're using with people is part of it. Because even as a healer, I don't ever say to my clients, oh, I know what you're going through. Nobody really knows what another person's going through. Even if you've had a similar situation, there's so many factors that can make it different. So be careful of that type of vocabulary word, you know, the vocabulary that you use with people, because you want, it's almost personal. I mean, it is very personal. It's like, no, this is what I'm going through. So just support them without being condescending, like you said. You want to encourage them, but be careful how much you push and how much you belittle the experience that they're having.
Yeah, good point. And you said vocabulary is very important. And so you just called yourself a healer. Explain what that means to some people who just said, what?
Yeah. So after my accident, I was in cognitive rehab for 9 months and it didn't help clear the fog. I had this fog that I just couldn't really explain to people and forget to turn off the stove and whatnot. So I learned this form of healing work that I personally went through. And then I became a practitioner. I spent 2 years learning the work. And that's what helped me personally, I feel, with getting my memory back and getting the fog lifted and having more clarity. So I do sessions with people, and I'm working on a program to help train other people to do that as well.
So you're healing yourself, and you can heal others with what you've learned.
I don't. It's all God, and I'm very clear on not saying it's me. I'm just the messenger of the train is what I always tell people. You know, your body gets confused, and there's a way you can talk to it and help it heal itself. It knows how to do that.
Yeah. So what do you say to people who are in constant pain and it's always coming out of their mouth? Oh, ow, this is killing me. Oh, this hurts. Oh my gosh. How should they change the vocabulary and not feel like they're lying to themselves and to nature?
Well, you can fake it till you make it. It's okay if you are experiencing things, but there's studies now being done on cellular memory, which the way you talk and the words that you use, there's proof at the cellular level how your body responds to it. So I ask all of my clients, please don't own your disease. When you own it, then you're telling your body, okay, we have whatever the word is, and your cells are going to start structuring themselves to support that.
So it's not my arthritis.
Mm-hmm. No, it isn't. It is, unless you want to keep it. You know, if you want to own that and have it. Now, you might truly have a diagnosis. You might truly have the pain from it. But I believe as much as you can do a study on rice and talk bad to rice and have it mold, and have the other container right next to it that you speak loving words to be perfect, I think you can do the same thing with your body. I think it's the way you communicate with yourself. And, you know, it's kind of like coaching your body. Like, thank you for waking up pain free. You know, always try to keep it in the positive, you know, optimal health, perfect health, if you want to say that.
Yeah, well, you know, it may kind of make sense because we love it when our friends encourage us and we're feeling a little insecure and or maybe we're, you know, we're thinking about asking a boy out or a girl out and I'm not up to this. And, oh, yes, you are. You have so much to offer, you know. And after this little pep talk, man, you're ready to conquer the world. Well, why can't we pep talk ourselves, right? Would that work? Or it has to be somebody else?
We can. We totally can. So think about this. I not that I've had this experience a lot, but have you ever had a police officer come up behind you with this siren on and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do? And you immediately start sweating, your heart races, and it was nothing you physically said to your body, okay, heart, start racing, you know, but your body automatically goes into behavior on an external happening. You can create that same thing in a positive way. There's nothing you mentally do to tell your body, okay, heart, start racing. Okay, let's start sweating. You know, I'm going to get pulled over.
Yeah, we don't think about the opposite. I can freak myself out. I can become fearful. I can become all those negative things.
Yeah.
But we can also become all those positive things too.
We can. Perception is everything. And I tell people that. They're like, I'm so sad. And I'm like, well, that's a choice. Do you want to stay sad because nobody's putting a gun to your head and telling you be sad today? It's just something you move through, you acknowledge it, you find out what your lessons are from that sad.
We're losing your audio.
Okay.
That's better.
So I think perception is the big part of healing and self-care and caretaking for other people, because five people can see the same situation and you all have a different view on what just happened based on your perception. So it's really, nobody makes you feel any way. It's a choice you always have.
Yeah. And so some of the opposite feelings that we want to experience is health. How does a person feel healthy? You know, energy. Mm-hmm. Happiness, peace, contentment, love,
self-acceptance. You
know, we can all feel those things, right? Because then it feels good, as opposed to anxiety and fear and worriness and dread and you name it. We don't even want to say those words.
Right.
Now, this isn't to say that just saying these magical positive words is going to automatically heal you, but I think it's proven that not saying them, in fact, saying the opposite, will most likely make you worse.
I believe that. And I think that you know, nothing is like, you know, you can't sit there and say, I want $1 million and $1 million will come to you. But I think that the more you train yourself into positive, positive conversations with yourself, the quicker your healing will happen. Just like I have happy memories of Christmas. I can't listen to Christmas music and be in a bad mood. You know, I hear certain songs on the radio that take me to a time period and there you are, you're there. And it isn't anything that you thought about doing. You just went there. So if you can train your body that same way, I think it can be done.
So let's talk about what you call help with cues or mental triggers, color coding, calendars, etc. What is that?
So anything that you can do to alleviate the stress in the person's life, they're already going through enough, trying to get through their daily routines. But if you can color code notes, like high priority, put in green, maybe needs to be done sometime today in orange, and just little sticky notes around the house as reminders, because, you know, as we all do, we go to the kitchen and what did I come here for? That type of episode happens more often where they get lost in the routines of things, and maybe even directions on how to get someplace. You know, one of the things that you can do is you know, journals and calendars help a lot, just as mental triggers.
We're losing your audio again.
Okay. Is it me getting closer?
Maybe that brings it back, yeah.
So if you can do any type of calendar for them, any mental triggers that help remind them where they need to go, routines are good. So, well, to a point, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Maybe I'll just do it now. But routines are good, but yet to help the brain recover, you want to also change up the routines so their brain is challenged. So maybe putting things in your refrigerator on different shelves for them to find. Because there's a process in the touch and the visual and the touch.
Well, that's going to be a tough one for me, finding things in the refrigerator. I can barely find them now. If you start moving around, I will never find them.
Well, okay, how about new pathways in your house? Move your furniture, you know, just something that gets a little different routine for them. Like when I, whenever I travel, not every time, but I try to take different roads when I'm going someplace rather than the exact same routine every time, just for mental sharpness. Yeah.
And they have luminosity, brain games, right?
They do. They do.
Does that work?
Well, that's what my, I was at Michigan State University and that's what they did with me was brain games to help communicate the hemispheres together. I don't know that I can say if it did or didn't help me. I don't know that it lifted my fog, but I can't say it hurt me at all. But I, you know, he had me do a lot of things. Like he would have me look out the window far away at something green. So if you need to be calmed down for some reason, there's some proof to green is good for the brain, but also looking a long distance at it helps you to refocus and get your kind of train of thought back on track again. Hmm. So there's lots of little things you can do to help with that.
I see. Give us some examples of the fine line with doing everything for them and helping. You know, do we like do everything for them, or do we make them struggle and sweat and do it themselves? You know, how they will need to be a challenge, but step in so that frustrations doesn't get to a boiling point. I mean, when my wife was in occupational therapy and, you know, she was a gourmet cook and she's back in the kitchen trying to be a cook again. And her mother says, no, let me get that for you. And I say, no, you can do it. Come on, stand up on your toes. Come on, I'll push you a little higher. You almost got it. Don't give up. You know, which is right? Am I just an evil, cruel cookie monster?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that when you understand that there's something that they need help with, but then doing everything for them, those are two different stories. So, you know, you want to challenge the person in a loving way, you know, because they do need some help with things, but the simple tasks that they can do, don't step in and do it for them. You know, when someone's trying to think of a word and you don't give them that extra 10 seconds for them to recall the word and you say it for them, you know, those type of examples, you know, oh, here, let me tie your shoes for you. If they're getting trouble remembering how to put it in a bow, you don't have to do it for them. You can help them remember how to do it, but don't do it for them. So I think that's, you know, the fine line between, you know, coddling and nurturing them and taking over their daily activities.
That's great advice. You're really good. You're really smart about this kind of thing.
Well,
for someone who has brain injury.
Yeah. No, I don't anymore. I don't anymore. I'm going to say I'm 99% healed, and I'm working on that extra 1% every day. So,
we could all use healing in our brain. I know I can, you know, memory is just, you know, I need the calendars. I need the sticky notes. I'm a little concerned. So I'm taking that study on early dementia, you know, because my mother had dementia. So every 6 months they give me this test. And the good news is there's good news and bad news. Bad news is I'm just under the borderline. So I haven't crossed into that never, never land, but they said I'm not getting worse. I'm maintaining, you know, I took up the piano again. I do this radio show. I try to do comedy. So just anything to make me think on my feet. And, you know, there are times even in this show where my mind will just go blank. And that's especially if I don't take notes. I've always got to, while you're thinking, I'll think of something to say. And if I don't immediately write it down, it's gone. These are the aids that help me get along. And I speak to a lot of people. A lot of them are in the same boat. They say, oh, yeah, you know, or they're talking to you and they can't remember the name of a movie or the name of an actor, which happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, there is truth to the aging process. I think that if there's certain supplements or oils that we can use, there's things we can do to just help have an optimal brain. The aging process is always going to happen. And I think, you know, there's a whole debate, which I won't get into too deep about cholesterol, but, you know, you need fat. Your brain needs it. And, you know, when you start putting things in your body that now your body's trying to recognize and, you know, that it's boring.
Never seen this.
So,
thank you, Monsanto.
I won't go there, but I could. But I think the natural way is really better for your body. Like, have butter. Just have butter. It knows what to do with butter. It doesn't know what to do with other
and
things.
And water.
So.
Knows what to do
Water's
with water.
Water's key. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's hydration is really, you know, you think about, I tell people, if you didn't put oil in your car, how would your engine run? And, you know, water to your body is like oil to your car. And they can understand, oh, yeah, I need to keep the oil in my car, but I don't like the taste of water. I'm like, well, just learn to somehow.
Well, speaking of water, you know, I'm one that always struggles. I think everybody struggles trying to believe to drink the amount they say to drink. What is it, eight-ounce glasses of water a day? I mean, some crazy number. Maybe it's more. So I don't do it, and then I go ahead and I get a kidney stone that was like giving birth. It hurt so much, I drove myself to the emergency room, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to make it. And then they gave me some morphine and stuff and went home because it comes and it goes. And then the next day, it felt just as bad again, and I called to have an ambulance take me to the emergency room. That's how bad the pain was. And so finally, I passed it, but they analyzed it and everything. And they said, you know, you need to drink. They did this whole test of, you know, drinking so much water and measuring the pee that comes out of you. And my number is I need to drink 3 liters of water a day. Now, that's a lot of water.
A lot of water.
But I'm doing it because I am motivated. I do not want to ever have that pain again. So we can do the things that we struggle with, you know, we're just not motivated enough. And pain is a wonderful motivator, or
the fear of
pain.
Well, it is, but it's funny because people know if I do X, Y, and Z, then I could end up with this disease, and they still do it. You know, it's like the Russian roulette game. Will it happen to me? You know, is this really something I have to be worried about? But, you know, I usually ask people, well, what's your pain pleasure from that? You know, there's some kind of reward you're getting for not drinking water. And, you know, you need to ask yourself that question and be honest about it because I'm just using the water as an example. If there's a payoff for you to be in pain and you've made your body think, I don't like water, well, what's your body going to do?
Yeah.
Not want water. You know, maybe not even process the water. Maybe need more water.
And you can experiment. You know, maybe the temperature of the water is what you don't like. Try different temperatures. Try different brands. I have a partner who swears that Dasani, you know, tastes better than Aquafina. I mean, and others say just the opposite. So whatever water tastes good for you, God knows there's hundreds to pick from.
Well, and there's healthier water.
Stay away from your tap.
Well, that's right. Yeah, there's healthier water than the bottled as well. So, you know, it's all relative. You could add drops of oil to make it a flavor you like,
oh, yeah,
or fruit.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of
like
things you can do.
Or, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You are so smart. Well, we're going to take another break.
Okay.
And don't go away. We'll be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Cheryl Hensel and me, Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. And I just love that commercial about my wife. You know, I wrote that book of basically telling, you know, her brain injury. We couldn't get her to the right hospital. The paramedics thought they were taking her to the right hospital. But, you know, sometimes the closer hospital is not always the best hospital. So remember that if one ever asks you, where do you want me to take your wife? And you know, so she had a blood clot that affected her, the left side of her brain, which is the speech and the, you know, the muscle movement of the arm and the leg and so on. So she has this thing called aphasia, which is, you know, just a confusion of everything coming in is fine. She can read and she can understand, thank God. But everything going out is really tweaked. Her writing, she can't remember how to spell the words. You know, it's like playing Pictionary. And her speech, you know, now 20 years later, she knows about 100 words, but she can very rarely use 100 words. They're just in there somewhere floating around, unable to grab. But she can probably use at will maybe a half a dozen words. with along with her expression and her gestures and her eye movements and her tonality is pretty powerful communication. You know, she's an excellent communicator, but she, like you said, the neural pathways are finding different avenues, even though she can't talk. You know, they machete this trail that makes her do a gesture, like look at her wrist and point to the thing and saying, you know, what time is it? You know, that's a neural pathway that she couldn't do before, you know. So the brain will find many ways to communicate, even if it's non-verbally. And they say 80% of communication is non-verbal.
They do say that. That's true. Okay. Well, that's fascinating. I think that, you know, I think there's hope for people. I really do. And had I not gone through it myself, I don't know that I could sit here and say that today. But, you know, I saw the deficits that I had from my injury. And, you know, fortunately, I learned the work. It was about, I guess, 3 years after my accident. So,
Oh, good for you.
Right.
Well, you know, if it wasn't for this stroke, she'd just be a famous person in her little tiny circle and sphere of influence. But now, because she's gone through all this pain and suffering and trials, she can encourage the world, literally the world, because she's just amazing. She's a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman, and she puts on dinner parties still. And she does all the work in the house, the laundry, the cooking, the house cleaning, etc. So she's like a one-arm wallpaper hanger. So don't tell me what you can't do. Come and meet my wife, and she'll teach you what you can do.
That's
when
awesome.
You don't have what you have, you know, two arms and two legs and a mouth and a voice. So, all right. Some people don't like me saying that because they say it makes them feel guilty, and we don't want people to feel guilty.
Oh, well, first of all, you can't make anybody feel anyway. That's their choice if they feel guilty, right?
Yeah.
And remind people of that, because we have no control over making somebody feel anyway. That's their option to feel guilt. So they really have to look at why they feel guilty. It's nothing you're doing or saying. It's their own story.
So let's get back. What does it mean when you say change paths, switch furniture, where things are in the refrigerator and cupboards? We spoke about that before.
We did.
In addition to the refrigerator and the furniture, what else can we do to just keep our brain on the alert, whether it's mentally or physically in our world around us?
Well, I like jigsaw puzzles, anything that you can do that you're using your hands and your brain. So there's cross exercises like right arm touching left knee, you know, left knee coming up. So anything that gets both sides of the body kind of talking to each other. I know, right? There's an exercise that's on YouTube where the person's doing the opposite hand thing. And I still have to like, wait a minute, how is he doing that? But I think anytime you can challenge, they say that the path between the hemispheres don't always communicate. But, you know, I'm not a doctor. I just have learned alternative ways of doing things. But I think that anytime you can, you know, get active in a sport like baseball that requires eye contact, swinging a bat, tennis, golf, for people that don't like sports, been just even simple things like having dinner instead of breakfast at the beginning.
Yeah, and even simple, very simple things like you can see I'm crossing my arms here, not because I'm not interested in what's going on, which some people say that when people cross their arms, you know, it means they're bored. Not me. I cross them because it's comfortable. But try doing it the other way, which I really need to learn how to. I can't even figure out how to do it the other way. It just feels so uncomfortable. And, you know, this stuff where we do this, half of the people do it this way and half of the people do it this way. And I'm not one of these people. And this just is so uncomfortable. You know, why should we do things like that make us uncomfortable?
Well, I think it just activates different parts of the brain. You know, even walking backwards, you know, just being silly little things that you can do around your house.
Did you say walking backwards?
Walk backwards.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's just keeping the brain alert and fresh. So anything that's a normal routine, it gets lazy. And so
you're saying use it or lose it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is true. That is true. Because if you think about our society, we're so, you know, I mean, this thing is like a necessary evil, so to speak. But we're all looking down. We're all stimulated, which might
You're
help.
You're looking at your phone, right?
I am. Yeah. And it might be a good thing, you know, for the brain, but I think it makes us lazy at times too, like writing. I think there's still a lot of value in putting your pen or pencil in your hand and writing. Yeah. So I think those type of activities can just help keep you sharp. And sleep, you know, maybe sleep on the opposite side of the bed or sleep at the bottom, you know, just change up your routine.
I want to do that all the time, but my wife won't let me. That is her side of the bed, and there's no way I'm getting on there unless when she's gone. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you could even brush your teeth with your left hand, you know, something like that. So we'll go simpler. We'll let your wife keep her side of the bed.
You spoke about essential oils. They're proven to be good for memory and recall. Are they really proven to be good? And why do you like cedarwood or patchouli? I remember patchouli because my cousin used to just take a bath in that stuff, and he thought that it attracted the chicks, you know. But rosemary, I love the smell of rosemary because it's all around planted in my neighborhood. So comment on all those oils that I mentioned.
Well, in my research, I was looking for anything natural that would help, and there are studies out there showing that the benefits of essential oils with the body. So I don't know if it's necessarily the trigger. What I think would be helpful for people is if they thought of something that they wanted healed in their body. So if your wife thought, okay, left hemisphere speaking, you know, I want all neurons pathways to it to improve and heal. And then she sniffed, you know, something she enjoyed, cedarwood, Julie, here. And then she sniffed it. I don't know if I said that last night, but that's going to be a trigger for her.
That's a great idea, because we hear this song that we haven't heard in 30 years, and all of a sudden we're back in junior high, lovesick over the girl that got away, and why wouldn't it work with what you just said? Yeah,
I think it would, and that's part of the training program that I'm developing for people. It's just those simple little things they can do that, and that's your brain.
The smell of a campfire, how it brings back, you know, the bonfires in high school and the girlfriend who's hanging on your arm, whatever.
Yeah. Old Spice and my dad, you know, I immediately smell that and I think of him. So I think that if we can kind of train it to, there's other benefits with the oils too. And rosemary, you know, scientifically has been proven to help improve memory.
Are you going to be at the mastermind? I'm sorry to interrupt.
I am.
So I'm going to be wearing Old Spice, so now I know I'm going to be reminding you of your dad.
All right.
Does he
you
look
know,
like
it's funny.
Me?
He's deceased now, but
I figured. I figured he was deceased.
But it's just funny how we have those triggers, and I think that, like you said, if we can take those. And turn them into positives for our body. I mean, why not? Because we automatically go to a period in time without even thinking about it. You know, how the brain works is quite fascinating, and we still don't know everything about it. And I'm not a neurologist. I'm just a person who's fascinated with the brain. But that's my spare time. I read and I study and I watch videos, and I really kind of like a nerd.
So can you recommend some good movies? You mentioned one. And maybe some others. What was that one you mentioned? You said, did you see this movie? And I said, no.
Well, the movie Concussion with Will Smith, he exposed the NFL and the football players who were on the front line. And there actually has continued to be a large amount of people who have CTE. It's a new, I don't know if I want to say disease, but a condition that's happening inside the brain that MRIs and CAT scans weren't showing. Excellent movie that kind of gives you some, you know, understanding. You know, he talks about the brain and he puts it in a glass jar, and he has a piece of meat in the glass jar with water, and he shakes it, And he said, that is your brain inside your skull. The jar represents your skull. The water is your cerebral fluid. And then the, you know, piece of meat is your brain. And he said that you, no helmet, or there's nothing you can do to protect your brain from a huge impact hitting the skull. There's just nothing you can do to prevent that. So if it's a severe enough blow, they're finding CTE in 12-year-olds now.
Wow.
So it's, that's one good movie that I really like. But I go on TED Talk. I go on TED Talk and watch, you know, the scientists and doctors talk about what they know about brains and brain injuries. But nobody's talking about healing them in natural ways. They all want, well, there are some people. I mean, there are some people I follow that are starting to look at more natural routes for the brain. But for the most part, they want to medicate. And I don't know that that works.
Well, it makes some people rich, I guess.
It definitely does. And then you have a whole lot of other problems that your body now has to deal with because you've medicated.
So which are the memory essential oils again, the memory and recall?
Cedarwood is a good one. And rosemary, which you could just get the herb rosemary for sniffing. And then patchouli. I think that was the other one that I have down. Lavender. Some people like lavender. I think for pain, lavender is also good. But you can really associate, if you're trying to use an oil to trigger healing in your body, and that whenever your body smells that, you know, just sniff the oil, and you're telling your body to help heal whatever. I'm not going to say if it does or doesn't work, but if you were to do some studies on it, it'd be interesting to find out. But I do believe in the power of the body to heal itself, just like prayer. You know, how does prayer... Yeah.
So where should we put it when we're doing this? Can we rub it into the part of the body that we want healed?
Sure. I mean, if you want to get that specific with it, you could. But I think that, you know, part of it is the olfactory system. You know, that's the trigger, because that's will go right to your brain in the memory part.
So
sniffing
smell
it. Mm-hmm, I would smell it.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I've got essential oils. I'm going to. You know, I bathe in them, so that's a good time. I can just, the whole house like reeks when I do that.
Right.
Everyone, I don't know if they complain, but they let me know that they can smell something. But it's a pleasant smell. Peppermint. I like the smell of peppermint. Maybe everybody doesn't. Peppermint's a good one, right?
It is. It is. And peppermint's good for if you get tension headaches or migraines, you know, putting them on the back part of your skull and on your temples. There's other little tricks you can do, too, for that.
All right. Let's talk about the most important one last. Actually, you've got 60 seconds to talk about this one. Okay. You know, you need to take care of yourself. You can't help anybody if you run yourself down, you know, put your oxygen mask on first. Take about 60 seconds and talk about this, and then we've got to say goodbye because time just has gone and slipped away from us.
Okay, it's true. They're finding, studies now are showing that caregivers have a higher risk of heart disease and high blood pressure and depression. So you really need to keep your health, take those breaks, don't feel guilty. It's okay that you leave your person with a neighbor or somebody just to sit with them if need be, but you really have to take care of yourself first, because you go down, then what are you going to do after that?
We all go down.
That's right. That's right.
So how can somebody get a hold of you if they have more information they want?
Sure. I have a website, cherylhensel.com, cherylhensel.com. And if they want to have a discussion with me, my number is 231-527-5802.
Is that me or you?
I think. Sorry about that. It's a house phone and I can't.
Mute yourself. And I thank you so much for coming on the show, Cheryl. God bless you. And I just can't believe how fast this hour has gone.
I know, right?
Thanks so much. And just a reminder, all our live shows will become recorded podcasts, as so will this one. So we'll see you next week at noon Pacific time. And God bless you richly. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on Radio Star Worldwide.